It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And ever since then, no one dares challenge me to Clawplach.
I just think they should have known better beforehand.
Right? Stupid lobster monsters.
What were they thinking?
That is probably my favorite Futurama joke. Is specifically, that's, I was just watching the one, that's where they go to Zoidberg's planet because it's their time to mate. And he's trying to mate, and he has his eye on this particular girl, and she ends up, for various reasons, falling for Fry instead. And so Zoidberg challenges him to Clawplach, which is a fight to the death in this big coliseum and things. And they do that, and it's fine. But what I really love is as they're doing it, it says, okay, first we will all stand for our national anthem. And you see built into the coliseum is a thing like the organ players from baseball games. And they play... Love that. Cracks me up every time. And it's like... It's straight up the recording, like it's the horns, like they literally just sampled the actual Star Trek thing.
Nice.
So yeah, it's pretty good. So hello everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that's a William in the streets, but a Tony in the sheets.
Huh.
I'm Tony.
And I'm in the streets. I'm William. This is episode 344.
344. Yep. This week has shown just how terrible the world is right now and how humanity is just awful and things are shitty. But who cares? Because so far 11 people have agreed to edit my book for free.
We're awesome.
Uh-huh. And I know I've got at least one, I know, yes, coming, that I haven't got yet.
Oh.
And a few others that I suspect could be yeses. I've had some yeses that surprised me.
Really?
I did not expect them to say yes. Yeah.
Good.
But yeah, so far 11 people. Yes, I finished the book, people. I finished that draft of the book. And so I sent out the thing to all the editors. If by the time you hear this, you haven't gotten anything in your email, that's because I was not under the impression that you were interested. I asked multiple times on this podcast if people were interested to let me know. The only person who did let me know is Jazz.
Mm.
That's true. I guess she's a guaranteed yes, too, because I think she seemed really enthusiastic. There are a couple other people who were on the list who listened to this podcast, but that's not where they... came up with that. So there is still time, but not a lot of time. If you're like, oh, I meant to say that, like, go for it. But I've got a lot of people. This could work out really well for me.
But you haven't sent it yet.
No.
Okay.
No. First of all, I'm going through, I'm reading it one more time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm catching big things, which mostly involve typos that spell check doesn't catch. And there's at least one thing I'm going to put in, but it's like a paragraph, because I spent so long on this that I had an idea in my head for how to change a part of, like, the end of the story, sort of the epilogues, the resolution section. And in my head, I had done it, but when I, because I was, you know, I was editing, I was rewriting from an existing draft, and that draft didn't have it. And I was like, what? And then I'm like, oh, did I just come up with that idea and not ever write it? And I didn't write it then either and went along, and now I'm like, no, I want to put it in there. Yeah. But it's like a paragraph, so I'll just add it in. But yeah, so I'm going to wait until the deadline I gave people to tell me if they want to.
Right, sure.
And then, very soon after that, I will send out an email to the people that have agreed to do it, explaining... what involved. A lot of people are like, I don't really know what this means. I've never edited anything.
Mm.
And I'm like, you know, it can mean all sorts of stuff, but just in general, I just want people to give me feedback.
Sure.
Because the idea here is I want people to like it and read it and buy it. And y'all are people who mm-hmm. read things and sometimes mm-hmm. buy things. Yep. So do that. And some of you are more serious editors, and that's great. And some of you may not feel like or feel that you're capable of getting to that kind of detail, but the feedback's still going to be
sure.
super useful, especially because I have trouble every time I remember this. I've been writing this for a year and a half. Literally no one except me knows a single thing about this book. Like, I think I have mentioned in passing once or twice that it involves angels. I believe I have used that word. So I guess that information's out there. But also, what I mean by angels is maybe very different than what you mean by angels.
Sure.
In other words, nobody knows anything. And every time I think about that, I'm like, holy shit, I really need to get this into other people's hands. Because this could absolutely just be some stupid fever dream of mine.
Yeah, that's always like a risk.
And I'm already in going through it the second time and everything, there's a million things I already want to change. There's so many things I want to change. But we've done enough of me deciding what to change. So if you're hearing some weird noise in the background, some of it is the cats, some of it is the washing machine is running. It should be near the end of its cycle, and then it will be quiet. I apologize for that. But we are traveling this weekend, and so some laundry had to be done.
Hmm.
I should explain the show real quick. Here's how the show works. For those of you who've never listened before, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, awesome people, excuse me, write into themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with little notes, comments, topics, things like that, you know, for us to use. And the hat, magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its email-reading servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show.
But not the hat's email. The hat reads its own email.
Yes.
We don't read the hat's
email.
No,
but I will admit I have read email before.
Yep, me too.
And I feel, you know, like by 2 degrees of separation, we're reading email. Or 1 degree.
That's true, because they show up in the hat.
Yeah, they show up in the hat, and then Kevin Bacon reads them, and then he sends them to us. Mm-hmm. And no, wait, that's not.
No, Samuel L. Jackson looks at them
so that he can do the sign language.
So he's prepared for the sign language. So
for the hearing impaired who are listening to our audio podcast. I feel like they're mocking themselves just by listening. I mean, listening, you know.
Mm.
Nobody's ever captioned our podcast. That could be
useful. No, it might be.
Yeah, so the book is done. I am so psyched about that. And it means I can start work, at least initial work, on my next project, Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates. That is a working title, though I'm rather fond of it.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. Very different kind of book than the one I wrote.
Is it going to be science fiction?
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be total space opera. And actually, it's based off of, well, as usual, it's based off a few ideas I had mushed together. But it's based off an idea that I have been plotting for a while for a role-playing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then I figured out a way that it would make a much better series of books, so now my role-playing group is just screwed. And I'm like, too bad. Not running it. I'm writing it instead.
Can't wait.
So, and you know me, like, I'm already tired of this book, so I'm really excited about the new one. how is your week?
Good. I mean, I'm still reading, Gothic
Heckle
horror.
And Jide.
No, I finished that stuff. I'm reading, Bram Stoker stuff now, including Dracula, but I'll be reading some of his other
stuff
too.
Son of Dracula, Dracula 3 in space.
We saw Blade Runner.
2049.
Yeah.
And?
It wasn't bad, but I mean, I left wondering who wanted this. Who? Like I said, I mean, it's perfectly serviceable movie. One thing it did do is it gave me some insight into the first movie, because I've never seen Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, in the theater.
Yeah.
And since they made this film, tonally it matches completely the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
I understand some choices they made artistically after seeing it in the theater. I get it.
Like, that are because of the big screen.
Yeah. It's with the original and this one were definitely made for a big screen experience. If you don't see it on the big screen, I think you'll just watch it and wonder as I did. I mean, because even in spite of all that, I thought, oh, okay, now I appreciate some of the things from the first movie that I didn't because I've never seen it on the big screen. But even so, I left thinking, well, that wasn't bad. I mean, acting was good, the writing was good, and all the stuff they did. I just don't, it didn't do anything, say anything different. It didn't do anything different.
Yeah.
I understand some people complained that the nudity was gratuitous. Which I usually notice, but for some reason I didn't really notice that while I was watching it.
Mm.
I suppose because even though there was a lot of nudity, it didn't strike me as being particularly sexual. I mean, it seemed very deliberately to not be that.
Okay.
Not that that necessarily matters. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
That it could still be, you know, offensive to people.
But it means it wasn't registering strongly on your
sense. No, it just seemed like
background noise.
Well, or maybe it just didn't seem any more objectionable than, say, any other part of the story that I might have found objectionable. It was all kind of part of one thing. So, I mean, it's not something that leaving I would have, you know, rushed out and recommended anybody see.
Yeah.
But then I found out that it was not doing very well
at the box office. No, it's not doing very well at the box office.
But also, someone said that they thought that, like, the audience that was showing up was, like, 70% male.
Hmm.
70%.
Dang.
So, you know, then I see a lot of these, articles.
Gosling, Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Joint. That's kind of surprising.
I see a lot of these articles saying specifically that women aren't interested in this film, apparently. I doubt it's just because of a couple scenes of gratuitous female nudity, though. It's got to be something
else. I hadn't heard blip one about the nudity. I didn't know there was nudity in the film. I haven't heard anything about that. The two most common theories I've seen people give for the box office lack of success are, one, that is long as fuck, and maybe doesn't need to be that long. It's like 3 hours.
It's just like,
and at least one friend was like, it did not need to be that long. They could have cut a lot of stuff.
The original didn't need to be as long.
And then the other theory, which I think is interesting, is Blade Runner's still kind of a cult film. It did poorly at the box office when it came out.
I recall that.
And the people who love it really love it, but they may have sort of overestimated how popular it is mainstream, so there may have been a much smaller number of people who wanted this.
Oh, well, also, it was an older demographic. Like, the older people were more represented. But another,
I am sure I will see it. I am fairly confident I won't see it in the theater, mostly because of the three-hour thing.
Well, another theory I heard someone say was that a lot of people thought, oh, yeah, I'll go see this. I'll see the original first. Saw the original and thought, no, I'm not going to go see this.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really explains why so lopsided in terms of men and women.
That's the only thing I can think of is it's an older property, and back in the day, sci-fi geekery was sort of considered a male purview. But, I mean, I don't think... I know most of the biggest Blade Runner fans I know are women, actually. I liked the original. I liked it more as a cultural touchstone than as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it was the last good performance anyone ever got out of Sean Young. And I do think you could make the argument it's one of the last good performances that came out of Rutger Hauer. Although somebody already argued Lady Hawk with me, and I love Lady Hawk, so maybe I'm wrong, but I've never been a huge fan of Rutger Hauer. I absolutely didn't think it needed a sequel.
It didn't.
As I think most things don't need sequels, and I certainly don't think they need sequels decades later. That being said, it's sci-fi, it's Harrison Ford, it's Ryan Gosling, it's apparently decent. So I'm sure I will see it sometime where I can sit on my couch and pause it if I want to. It's
a perfectly good film. I don't see. We also have been watching this season of American Horror Story. We just went ahead and found a way to watch it.
Oh, you're done with Roanoke, or you stopped with Roanoke?
We finished Roanoke on disc.
Uh-huh. And now you're doing Cult.
Yeah.
I am super curious. Not enough to watch it, but I am super curious.
You haven't watched it?
No, I don't watch any American Horror Story.
No. I'm not sure.
We tried to watch a couple episodes the very first season, and we're so not into it. Which is funny, because I later read up on all of them, and the first season was really fascinating once it got going. But not at the beginning for me.
Well, I was interested in it right away. I mean, they do some things that I think are kind of like that don't serve the story but seem to want to draw in viewers that are gross or gratuitous, and I don't like when they do that. But they do it, they don't do it very often, and outside of that, the stories and the acting is usually pretty good. I mean, Roanoke is a huge exception to that. But I mean,
And if you look at the Ghost House or whatever, the first season, the problem is, in the beginning, it absolutely looked like they were just flinging everything at the wall to see what sticks, and they were not, like, so many loose ends and things like that. But then I read up, and they actually, like, resolved it.
Sure, yeah.
But that's the thing. If you watch the first 3 or 4 episodes of that first season, you're like, they're pulling out too much shit here. There's no way they're, especially because it's a horror movie. Horror is famous for just leaving weird things. Oh, that was just atmospheric or whatever. Huh. So in my head, there was no way that was ever going to make a satisfying conclusion. Years later, read Wikipedia, totally did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess I didn't have that. I mean, I guess I expected.
And honestly, Dylan McDermott crying and masturbating was a little bit of a turnoff just right out of the get-go.
Well, see, that's an example of what I mean, where it's like, that's not good. But a little bit of that happens every season, but mostly it's good.
Yeah.
Even in Roanoke, there's a quarter of the season, like literally 25% of the time spent in the season telling stories, it's actually really good. The rest of the time, it's so dumb, I can't even believe they did this. Although, I will say this, I do give them credit for trying something bold, you know, experimenting. I appreciate that.
Well, if you're going to do it every season, you got to come up with some new shit.
And so I don't fault them for that, and I was perfectly willing to try, this season a try. This season seems so far to be the most compelling season they've had since the first one. And
well, it's very topical, both in terms of the election and in terms of clowns, which are big right now.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, and part of, I'm a little afraid to say anything about it because,
don't spoil
it. No, I'm not going to spoil anything, but as far as my impression of it, because sometimes I'm not sure that I'm smart enough to understand what they're doing.
I frequently feel that way when I talk to you.
So, but it feels like it's really not the thrust of the story and the narrative and everyone's arc and whatever, it doesn't really have anything to do with the election at all. That's just the backdrop. Mm. Which I find really interesting, unless I'm completely missing it. Unless there's some political or ideological statement that the show's making that's going clear over my head, I don't know.
I assumed it was going to be the vehicle by which we explore the sort of political disparity in this country and the psychological impact that's having on people. Basically, trying to make a horror story out of the insane fights that people have on social media nowadays. That was my assumption going, and then somehow make it about a cult that likes clowns or whatever. Like, that was my guess, but I didn't ever plan to watch it, so I didn't delve into the idea too much.
It's intensely,
I just love that they didn't change the name. Like, they said Donald Trump, and I was like, wow, they're not going to go with Ronald Rump or something?
Well, it's intensely psychological. I mean, it's very, I mean, they do, the writing is really, really good in terms of how people are interacting and the motivations that lead people to do certain things. A lot of times they'll have, you know, you'll be watching some story and a character will do some outlandish thing, and you'll think to yourself, doesn't seem like there was much of a ramp up to that, right? Like, it's just, I don't believe this person would do this. I often find
in a series, there's like an episode where the character, like somebody wrote something, and I'm like, yeah, they made the characters do a bunch of shit that didn't make any sense.
They would not normally do, right? But in this, just about everything characters do, no matter how outlandish, you're like, yeah, I can see that character doing that. And more than that, you could almost see it happening in real life. Mm. Not quite. I mean, because American Horror Story is that way. It's totally sensationalistic, but it's pretty, I don't know. I don't know if I'm bringing something to it that's making it resonate, or if there's something I'm not understanding about it. Because usually when I get done watching it, my initial reaction is, wow, that was really good. And then I think about it and realize, but maybe I didn't even understand what I just saw. Because it's pretty complicated, too. It's very involved and complicated. I wish you were watching it, because maybe you could explain, you know, where I'm going wrong with some things if I...
When it's done, I'll read it on Wikipedia, and then I'll explain it to you.
Okay.
We finally finished third season of Killjoys.
Mm.
Still love that show, and it's still not a very good show. It's Warehouse 13 syndrome. Like, I just love... The characters are awesome. Their interactions are awesome. The plot...
Yeah.
And it's very much like... Because apparently it has officially been granted 2 more short seasons to wrap up its entire arc. Based on how this season ended, I feel like I know what the general plot lines of the next 2 seasons are going to be. And I'm like, that's not good. I should not be able to predict that already. But it's just got great people in it, and they just have great interactions and awesome dialogue, and I love that.
You know, there aren't even any new shows this fall that I'm looking forward to watching. I don't even know what's coming.
We've got Ghosted sitting on our DVR that I'm hoping against hope is good. I got some friends who are subscribing to CBS All Access so they can watch the new Star Trek. Sounds terrible to me, and I'm not going near it. But
it sounds interesting, but I'm not subscribing to CBS All Access. I have a feeling there's going to come a time real soon here where we're just not watching television anymore because we're not going to sign up for services. And unless we can...
See, and I'm considering I'm considering cutting the cord, except for internet, and then just subscribing to a bunch of streaming stuff. Because
I don't think
it would be really hard for me to subscribe to so many things that it cost more than what I'm currently paying the cable company.
Because you're paying that much?
Yes.
Wow. So we're probably
paying.
We are paying a
ridiculous amount to the cable company, and we kind of need to fix that. But.
Well, what else do you have to say about your week?
I watched a couple things on Amazon. One was an odd little movie from, I believe, 1968 called Torture Garden. And it's a old-school 60s, like, mainstream horror film. It's very much in the vein, if you ever saw Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, or Twilight Zone, the movie, it's a wraparound story, and then people have these little visions that are actually what the anthology... It's an anthology film.
Mm.
It's very much like Tales from the Dark Side, spoiler alert for, like, a 50-year-old movie, is all these people are someplace, and they get told these stories, and they're all stories about them and them dying.
Mm.
And it turns out that this is their entrance to hell, and they're just seeing what's supposed to happen. Because in their mind, they're all... The things that they're being shown are going to happen in a couple days. And then it's like, no, it actually already happened, and you're dead, and here's hell. And so this was in that vein.
And here's hell.
Yeah. I believe that's exact dialogue. They're like, and here's hell. This is in that vein, but it was done as a circus. As, you know, sideshow circus scariness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Evil Barker who turns out to be the devil, shit like that.
Mm.
It was not very good. It's fun if you like those old-timey movies, and I did. What is most interesting about it is it contains both a very young Jack Palance and a very young Burgess Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are they both in roles that feel unusual to me, it would make a lot more sense to me if they had been cast in each other's roles. Burgess freaking Meredith plays the scary carnival barker who turns out to be the devil.
No. Oh.
Like, before this, I couldn't even have pictured that. Like, that's not his thing. He's old. He's, you know, old guy. Sometimes creepy old guy, but little, you know, wizened old guy. And frequently, he's, you know, the narrator. Like, this one, he's evil, and it's weird. And Jack Palance, a very, very sort of calm, stoic role, which, you know, he can do, but it's very odd. every once in a while, I'll watch a movie from the 70s that stars Richard Mall, and it freaks me the fuck out. Because before Night Court, he was just an actor. And admittedly, he played villains in a lot of things because he was this huge guy. But sometimes he's just the dude in the movie. I've seen that a couple of times, and he has a full head of hair and a beard, and he's just, like, he's our main character. And that's such a disconnect in my head. And it's the same thing here. I'm like, Jack Palance, he's not doing this to anybody. He's not, like, all wrinkly and shit. He's just a dude as part of this story. And, like, that was odd to me. But the other one I want to talk about. I'm still playing a lot of Final Fantasy 15. I'm not going to talk about it because I feel like the Final Fantasy games are very much a thing that are only interesting to hear about if you play Final Fantasy. I feel like something about those games specifically are very... You had to be there. Like, it, I don't know. I feel like it's not a fun one to talk about because it's just always so intricate and weird. And it's like talking to somebody about an anime show they've never seen. Yeah, so I'm not gonna. But I'm still playing that. I'm still largely enjoying that. No, there's another thing, a TV show that showed up on Amazon Video that I've been watching. Are you familiar with Hammer Studios?
Mm-hmm.
I'm frequently surprised at people who aren't, including Stu, who's from the goddamn UK. And I was like, okay, they made every horror movie you've ever heard of that came out of your country. Except, I guess, Attack the Block. And he's like, I don't watch a lot of horror movies. I'm like, we were just talking the other day, all those Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee ones, those are all them.
Yeah, that's
and right. That's what it is. Hammer Horror, or Hammer Studios, it still exists, is a film studio primarily known for horror films, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
That more or less spun off of the Universal stuff. I mean,
it's in that vein. There was a series of Dracula ones. Yeah, there was a series of Frankenstein ones.
You'd be completely forgiven for thinking
like
they're Universal because of how similar they are and how they seem to spin off.
They are known for being very gothic, very much a vibe of their times, and showing a lot of boobs. Not always, but they tended to do that a fair bit. They were a big enough deal in the UK that they had their own TV show called Hammer's House of Horror. That was very much in those sort of anthologies that every episode's just a little bit story. And the first season of that is on Amazon Video from 1980. And it's fascinating to watch because it's horror for television in 1980 in Britain. So, like, it's, I don't know, it just has this vibe that I find interesting. And it's a bunch of people, like, and you recognize a bunch of them. And then alternatively, I watched one, and I'm like, I know that lead actress. Where do I know her from? I pull up IMDb. I absolutely do not know her. But she's had a very prolific career. But it's entirely on British television. And I realized there are a lot of hardworking British actors that basically never got off the BBC and had a perfectly great and successful career.
Sure.
Just being on the BBC and everything. But so I've been watching that, and it's interesting. I did want to talk for 1 second about an episode I saw that was very fun in that it had animals in it, and the animals, as part of the story, experienced some traumatic events, which normally... Don't like to see animals suffer.
Right.
Certainly don't like to think of animals being made to suffer so that we can watch TV.
Yeah.
However, this was awesome because the animals in question, though clearly well-trained, were terrible actors. So it was incredibly obvious that as animals, they were having fun. It starts with the main character's in it, like his kitchen table, and he walks out or whatever, and they pan down, and there's this dog, and this is like a half hour into the episode. I'm like, what, I didn't know there was a dog here. Why is okay, there's a dog. Dog's laying on the floor, just zonked, just out, except you can see his chest moving real fast, like he's breathing really fast. And I was like, what is the dog freaked out or what? No, dog's just awake and really excited, because as soon as there's the off camera signal, like, he jumps up and trots into the other room because he's just so happy to be here. And then we have this thunderstorm out of nowhere, and it freaks out the dog, and the dog even goes under this end table and, like, curls up in a little ball facing the corner because it's so scared. Except every time they cut away and they cut back, he's just standing there under the table, big doggy grin, like, I'm a dog, what's up? And then he would see some off-camera cue and be like, oh yeah, and he would turn back around and face the corner. And I'm confident that the thunder was put in post, because the dog's reactions were never timed up with the thunderclaps. It goes like, boom! And the dog's like, what? Oh, okay, yeah. And then it freaks out. So the dog's just having a great time, you know, just loves the acting profession as a whole. There's also a horse in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't play much of a part. It's just there. They have a horse. You see the horse. You hear the horse making scary noises in the background, like during a thunderstorm or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're... But there is a point where somebody's riding the horse, and they get struck down by an evil person, and the horse gets struck down.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of cut away, but you see the horse get struck down in that the horse... You cut to the horse flopping on the ground, and then just eating the grass. That, like, it reached out with its big horse lips and just starts munching the grass. Just land. And they stayed on it for a good, you know, five count as the horse was felled and just... Rawr, 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 rawr. So I was just delighted. I'm like, they're having a great time. It's wonderful. So that was fun to watch. But yeah, Hammer House of Horror. I've been enjoying it since right now. I have to wake up at 5 in the morning so I can go sit on the couch for an hour and a half while my muscles adjust for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing a lot of watching that kind of stuff in the morning. Finished my book. That was a big one. That is mostly it. Tomorrow night, we are going to see live Cameron Esposito and Bria Butcher.
Oh.
And we are very excited about that, because we love both of them. And find both of them funny. And my brother is also going, and his youngest, who I believe is 14 now, somewhere around there.
Mm.
I should ask him when I see him. But yeah, we're going for the weekend to see my brother's family. But we timed it so that the first night we'll go do this, and then we'll go there. So that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm tired of everybody traveling. I want my wife and I to just stay home for a while, but it's not going to happen for a bit.
Yeah.
At this weekend, next weekend we go visit family. Weekend after that we're here, and then the weekend after that Trish leaves for a week. She's going out to Virginia. My in-laws are actually staying at the beach house over this time period for like 6 or 7 weeks.
Oh.
Because nobody was renting it, and they're fixing a lot of things. They're rebuilding the deck and stuff, so they're there for that.
Okay.
So Trish is like, I got extra time. I'll just go out there for a week.
Sure.
So.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. That's how I got going. Should we hat some things or?
Okay.
I'm gonna sneeze, people. I'm gonna try and protect you. But oh, I do have one bit of exciting news.
What's that?
No delivery person is showing up.
Mm.
You're welcome.
How's your talent?
Don't say that in front of me.
Wants to know.
Oh, he has a question. Okay.
Yeah, there's just two words here. I'm not sure if it's a question. There's a question mark.
I'm impressed. He knows two words.
Hot dogs, ketchup. Like, is he asking, would you put ketchup on hot dogs? Or do
I'm
you put
guessing,
ketchup on hot dogs?
I'm guessing that is what he's asking.
Or
maybe he's offering us hot dogs and asking if we would care for ketchup. Like when you say, here's some tea, would you like cream? You know, here's some hot dog. Are you giving us hot dogs? Also, I don't know what the hat does magically on its own transmogrifying things, but I wonder, Azure Talon, maybe, sometime after you wrote this, did you write the hat again? And maybe ask the exact same question in a slightly different phrasing? I feel like you should do some soul searching and see if maybe that happened.
Like ketchup, hot dogs?
Or maybe, is it okay to put hot dogs, or ketchup on hot dogs, ever, you know, something like that. I wonder if you did. I mean, I wouldn't know. That's between you and the hat, but I'm just saying, look into your heart and see.
You're right. Well, you know, as a person who's been a vegetarian for, I don't know, what it's been, 25 years now or something?
I saw him eating a half chicken yesterday. It was still alive.
One of the most readily available and most successful in terms of imitating meat products you can get that's meatless is a hot dog.
That is interesting because I have not found that to be the case. I have found that most imitation hot dogs are terrifying.
Okay, well, there have been a few that aren't very good, but when I've... First of all, when I became a vegetarian, clear up to now, I don't care about fake meat.
Yeah,
I'm not interested in it. However, sometimes you know, I'm invited to barbecue or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone's going to grill and they want you to bring something to grill. So I'll bring, you know, a fake hamburger, fake hot dog or whatever will fit that description. And I've found in my experience, and maybe other vegetarians' experiences are different, but my experience is finding fake hot dogs that are, like, edible and reasonably decent is easier than just about anything else, in my experience. But when I have a hot dog, and this is true when I used to have meat hot dogs, I would almost never put ketchup on them. Sometimes I would. But usually if there was lots of other things on them, too, like pickles and onions and whatever else. But if I was going to put one or two things on it, it would be mustard, would always be one of those things.
Okay.
And then the other might be chili or onions or something like that. But ketchup, very rarely. Okay. Almost never.
So, I'm handing you a vegan hot dog in a bun right now.
Sure.
We have every topping that you would normally consider a hot dog topping in front of us here.
Okay.
What are you putting on it? Mustard and chili, or what are you doing? You can do whatever you want.
The my favorite way to eat a hot dog like product is chili, onions, and mustard.
Interesting.
And relish, and it can be sweet or dill, but I think I prefer sweet. I might prefer sweet.
All right. Can you give me more on the mustard?
It doesn't really matter. I do like stone ground mustard or spicy mustard.
Drastic differences.
Yeah. But I like all kinds of mustard. So
okay.
It you know, I would probably eat whatever mustard is available. But if I had
a
choice,
we have them all.
Probably a really spicy, like horseradish mustard.
You're the one who kept putting more types of mustard onto my shopping list. Yeah, and you still didn't get the right one. Comes in a bottle.
What are
it's
you talking
red.
About?
It says ketchup on it. Oh wait, I hear it now. That's on me.
What is that?
It's 30 Rock. There's a 30 Rock episode where Liz finds out that Tracy's been living in her apartment for ages, and she didn't know about it. And she's like, "You're the reason somebody kept writing we need more kinds of mustard on the thing." And he's like, "Yeah, and you still haven't got the right one." He says it comes in a big, tall bottle. It's red. It says ketchup on it. Oh, wait, I hear it now. That's on me. By the way, disclaimer, it's possible I am mixing up the two and it's more kinds of ketchup and he says the yellow one that says mustard, but I don't think so. I mean, the joke works either way. But
so yeah, that's
okay.
But I mean, usually I don't have chili. That's, you know, we just don't have that
around
the house.
Yeah.
So mostly I'll just put whatever kind of mustard we've got. If we've got spicy, I'll use that, but if it's just yellow, I'll use that and nothing else. Unless we've got relish, but we hardly ever have relish.
Mustard's
either.
A very polarizing condiment.
Well, when I was a kid, I used to put mustard on everything. Potato chips or...
Well, I think I've spoken of...
French fries, whatever.
My cousins and the peanut butter and mustard sandwich.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which surprisingly is good if you like those two things. You have to like those two things. They work well together. I do have to pause for a second. I do have one more thing to say about this week.
That doesn't have anything to do with mustard?
Not at all. Remember I was watching Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Like, the night after we recorded it, I finished season 3.
Sure.
And I was like, maybe I'll start season 4 tomorrow, because maybe part of the issue is that there was such a gap in
time
and we romanticized the original order. So I started it. Yeah, definitely not as good, and definitely not the same thing. Still good. Still watchable. Still enjoyed it. Still watched the entire thing. I am now wondering if I didn't actually finish fourth season originally, because some shit went down in the last couple episodes that I did not remember. And also, I don't want to say it ends on a cliffhanger, but it basically ends like mid-scene.
Hmm.
So I was very surprised about that. But yeah, it was very different. It's definitely not as good. But still watch it. I'm still glad I watched that, but now I'm done with that too. That's why I'm moving on to Hammer's Asshole. Alright, so, hot dogs. I know a lot of people. Well, I'm assuming Azure Talon's coming from the Chicago school. In Chicago, you do not put ketchup on a hot dog, or corrupt politicians have you killed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, because a Chicago dog has like 27 fucking toppings on it. It's insane. Ketchup is not one of them.
Hmm.
So it's the thing. You don't put ketchup on a hot dog. And I assume that's where Azure Talon's coming from. That being said, I know so many people that only put ketchup on their hot dog.
Really?
Yes. A lot of people, including my wife. Just put ketchup on there, good to go. My preference for most hot meat sandwich and sandwich related things. I'm not going to get into the debate about hot dog being a sandwich or whatever, but in that thing of stuff on bread with hot meat of some fashion. So
yeah.
Hot dogs, other sausages, hamburgers, pork tenderloins, stuff like this. Mm-hmm. My go-to is very unusual, I think. Onions, mayo.
Yeah, I do mayo sometimes, too.
Love that.
Yeah, I do, too.
On any of them. Like,
and
it works for
sauerkraut
everything.
Sauerkraut, too. I forgot to mention that one. I like sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, I have to be in the mood. Mustard, in general, I have to be in the mood. I am a person who likes mustard. I'm a person who does not choose to eat mustard very often. Hmm. I have to be in the right mood. The classic that you will get in those rare places where, like, a fast food chain is selling a hot dog for a while or whatever is... ketchup, mustard, relish, sometimes onions. That's not a bad combination either. And I know, yeah, it gets weirder if you go to hot dogs cousins, if you get into like a Polish sausage or a brat or something.
Right, right.
Then there's a whole other story. Again,
right,
for me, mayo and onions, whatever. And none of these condiments do I hate. None of these condiments, I'm like, yeah, if you put that on it, I'm probably not going to eat it. Like, no, it's fine. I will order, like, a Polish sausage from Sparty's, and I'll be like, leave off the mustard, leave off the sport peppers, so it's just, like, onions and the sausage. Because I'm a big fan of sausage. Tee-hee. To the degree that I often don't feel much need to add something to it.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, I love hot dogs. I love all that kind of stuff. But I mean, I think it's, I don't give a damn. I really don't.
Well, yeah. I mean, if someone handed me something with ketchup on it, I wouldn't say no.
No, but I mostly mean to judge other people, like whether or not this is okay.
Oh, yeah.
There are things out there I will judge. This season of Project Runway, by the way. Holy shit. Never been so pleased and so angry at a show. Also think that Project Runway is on its way out and probably doesn't have a lot of seasons left, with little subtle signs like, in some cases, their sponsors for this fashion competition are Dixie Cups, and in some other cases, their sponsors for this fashion competition are nobody.
I pretty much only use ketchup for, like, French fries and tater tots and stuff like that.
But you'll also use mustard for those.
I will. What? Really, these days. But
a la Sling Blade.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways in which you remind me of Sling Blade. Some call it Kaiser Blade. I call it Sling Blade. I still have trouble accepting that was Billy Bob Thornton. Like,
pretty
that
amazing.
Was such a transformative role.
Pretty amazing.
And it... might have been the first thing I saw him in. It was definitely the first thing I saw him in and knew that's who that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why... Well, I don't know. I think Billy Bob Thornton's a really good actor. There was a definite chunk of years where he was a really not good actor.
Well, at least it's part.
And it's somewhere between Sling Blade and season one of Fargo. In both of those, he's great.
Yeah.
And he did good things in between, but there's a chunk of time in there where he kind of wasn't that good in a lot of stuff. So I get very confused, but Sling Blade, he was amazing. I'm going to put my arm around you now.
It sounds creepy when you say it.
Sounds creepy when he says it.
Not really.
Oh,
in the context, it's not bad.
That was one of the first movies that I really noticed film craft. Because that movie is just incredibly deliberately built.
Well, he directed it.
And it's wrote it. It's shot very carefully. It was the first time I noticed subtext and motif and stuff. The thing where everybody, where so many conversations end with somebody saying, "Carl?" And then that's the end of that conversation, mm-hmm. which of course culminates in a really freaky end of a conversation, where the last thing somebody says is "Carl." Mm-hmm. Also, possibly my favorite John Ritter performance ever.
Really good.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, and the guy that plays the kid, he's in stuff now too, but.
I don't remember his name. Stephen Root. Stephen Root is in everything. I always get amazed when people don't know Stephen Root, because I'm like, you've seen him in 6 things this week. Some of them may have been animated things that he just voiced, but Stephen Root.
No, but the guy who plays the kid is in stuff still.
But I don't remember who that kid is. In my head, it's Haley Joel Osment, because it's always Haley Joel Osment. It's either Haley Joel Osment or the kid from Jerry Maguire. Those are the only two children.
I wish I could think
movies.
Of something he's been in recently that you might know, because I'm sure there is something.
If you gave me a name, I probably would.
Ah. He was good in... The kid was good.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was good.
As an adult, he's just all right.
Fucking...
He's not, like, blow your mind.
What's his name?
Kind of all right.
Who played the stepdad in that... That... I don't... I think he's a country singer originally, but he did an amazing job in that. I can't remember who the mother was, either. Yeah. Anyway, so ketchup. Yeah, I mean, I think neither of us push for it on hot dogs, but we're fine with it. Neither of us is from Chicago, so whatever. I don't know about New York style hot dogs are wider and floppier and greasy. No, wait, that's pizza. Wouldn't it be funny if that was a thing? Like each city's style. Was for all the food.
Bagels.
Exactly. New York bagels are greasier and they're big and floppy. You have to fold them. New York cheesecake, same thing. Chicago style cheesecake, much deeper, you know. But some people don't even consider it a cheesecake. They call it a cream cheese pie instead, you know. Things like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
That'll be fun.
It makes things easier.
Yeah, yeah. Give me... I'd like to order this burrito. Can you make it New York style? You know, big, floppy, and greasy.
That's good. I like it.
All right. Also, with Chicago style hot dogs, you got the poppy seed bun is a big part of it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it has poppy seeds on it. It has a bunch of shit on it, including sport peppers, and a pickle spear on the hot dog.
Mm.
And... The green shit.
The relish, you mean?
But it's not, but it's special relish.
Oh.
Because it's fucking neon green.
Oh, okay.
It is stuff that you're like, either the brine for this was some sort of Kool-Aid, like green Kool-Aid, or this is actually radioactive. And it is unique to a Chicago-style hot dog. I have literally never seen this food stuff or heard of this food stuff used in any other dish anywhere ever. It is just for and it is a freaky color. It looks like somebody... Okay. You know, back in the day, 50s, 60s, and 70s, when cookbooks were kind of insane, because people threw dinner parties still,
sure.
And so they would come up with these elaborate dishes that frequently tasted horrible but looked really impressive. And there were a lot of things that were holiday-themed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And consequently, you would dye things certain colors.
Sure.
Red and green for Christmas stuff. This relish is the color of green Christmas-themed dinner party food the world over. Like, or just the U.S., I guess. 'Cause it's really like that, but... It's that color. It's that weird... It's like the color of green gumdrops.
Mm-hmm.
It's like somebody took a bunch of green gumdrops and chopped them up fine, is this stuff. And it basically tastes like sweet relish to me. I've never found much difference. But it looks weird. And seriously, look it up sometime. Chicago-style hot dog has so much crap on it. And I've eaten them, and they are fine. I will not choose them because I can't hardly fucking taste the hot dog. Like, you could put anything in there. You put a Twix bar in there, and it would pretty much taste the same because the percentage of Twix to everything else is very small.
Mm.
Like, it could be anything. That could improve some of the vegetarian. Have you had Smart Dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had Smart Dogs grilled?
Mm-hmm.
They melt like candles.
It's terrifying. They're not good for grilling, though.
They are not good. Also, Quorn, who I love, makes shitty hot dogs.
I didn't know they made hot dogs.
They do. They're shitty. It's fine that you didn't know that. You can continue to not know that.
Field Roast makes good hot dogs.
It's not a real name. No, I've never heard of it, so it doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite comebacks lately. You probably noticed it. I probably said a lot on the podcast, too. People are like, did you know blah, 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 blah? And I'm like, I did not know that. In fact, I did not know that so much, I'm pretty sure you made it up. The same thing, Field Roast. I didn't know that was his name. I think you made it up. All right, anyway, I have a question in my hand that I drew, so.
Yeah.
This is from Craig.
Mm-hmm.
Craig is getting married, I believe, in April.
That's what he said.
Craig, we gave you a lot of wedding advice.
Probably not good.
Quite possibly. Yeah. There is one, and I hold to this one. I've said it before. It's really true. Trust me on this one. For the photos, make a list ahead of time and set it up such that you start with the photos that have everyone in attendance, and then you work your way down so that you're whittling away people. So you take the photos with everybody, and then you're like, okay, everybody not in the wedding party or part of the immediate family can leave. And then you go, and you're like, okay, now all the, like, it's so much cleaner and easier, and it has a lot less of people standing around being pissed off. I'm telling you, I have seen how wedding photos are done at many, many weddings. This is the key to making them not shitty or to making them less shitty. Do it. Please. Trust me on this one. Everything else, I may not know what I'm talking about. That's the wedding advice right there. That one. Do that.
Okay.
Also, you know, marry somebody that you like. I mean, I feel like that's
pretty good
too. I don't really know who he's marrying, but marry somebody you like. Somebody I like. But not in that way. I'm already married. All right. Craig asks, is Google's DeepMind AI just proto-Skynet? That's a very difficult question for me, because I have no idea what the hell Google's DeepMind AI is. Except I've heard that it might possibly be proto-Skynet from somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure
Google. That's the only thing I've heard.
I'm not sure Google knows yet.
So 100% of my sources say, yes, it is proto-Skynet. Or at least 100% of my sources wonder if it is.
It's sure spooking a lot of people.
What is it? Tell me. I zero background knowledge on this. I understand what an AI is. I understand what Google is. But...
Well, I mean... I don't think I know any more than you do. The only thing I've heard of it or about it, which maybe it's not even accurate information, I don't know, is that Google is a project they're working on. I don't even know if it's in any way related to stuff they already do, like, well, we're going to incorporate, you know, big data or something, you know, and how it works or anything like that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows very much about it. I'm not so sure Google is entirely understands fully what they're going to do with it or what they mean. It's just something that Google decided they were going to do. Kind of like how, you know, Elon Musk will develop an electric car, and then he'll make a rocket, and then he'll plan going to Mars. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's just they can. They got the money to do this thing, so they're going to try to do it. I think people are drawing a connection between, you know, Google's online presence and this thing, like they're going to be connected somehow, and that's where the whole Skynet thing comes in.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they are. And I mean, for all I know, all Google's doing is something similar to what IBM did with Watson or whatever. They're just developing this thing completely separate, has nothing to do with online anything.
And it's going to fail horribly.
So I don't know.
I have...
Maybe someone can enlighten us because they know more about it. I have no idea.
I've sold my soul to three entities on the internet. I mean, if you don't count porn as a whole, which I don't. Google, Amazon, and Snopes. One of those I don't feel bad about. It depends on the day how bad I feel about Amazon. Google's just gotten creepy.
Well,
and I don't think it's Google's fault in that I think a company can only get so pervasive and huge before they, by definition, seem creepy and oppressively evil. And yes, I'm aware Google's mission statement is don't be evil. I'm also aware of how trite that is and how I know for a fact Google has worked against that mission statement in multiple cases. I try and fool myself into thinking that by and large they adhere to it, but I know for a fact they haven't, and I know they're very much capable of not if they felt like not. And so when I hear, I'm not as freaked out about AI as Elon Musk is, but I'm pretty freaked out about AI. I'm totally into VI. I'm totally into experiences, clever bot, shit that will be interactive to a degree that it feels like a thinking entity.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I'm very opposed to genuine artificial intelligence. I don't know. I think there is a lot of risk involved. I think it's really hard to put the put the rabbit back in the hat. That's not what it is. It's something that you couldn't actually. You could put a rabbit back in. What the hell can you not put back in?
I don't know.
The genie in the bottle. Probably. I think that's it. But like, once you've done it, you've done it. And I don't. I mean, let me hit you with this. What's the benefit of an AI?
To who?
Society. People. Me. Why are people trying to make an AI outside of because it's there?
Okay. So, in my opinion, That is the only reason. It's like, okay. Can we do it?
What do you think their arguments are? What do you think they're thinking?
They're thinking that this is a way, you know, like some people, I think Elon Musk is kind of along these lines too, talking about how a lot of these things will take jobs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what a lot of people who are working on these things, they're thinking exactly that. They'll take jobs that nobody else really wants. And they'll drive the price of things down. And maybe we'll get to a point where we can just, if a person doesn't want a job or they're not skilled enough to have a job or they can't get a job, we can just give them free stuff because the stuff's so cheap because robots are making all of it.
And I love that. I absolutely think you can do that without creating a genuine artificial intelligence. I think you can create complicated algorithms and processes that require minimum maintenance that can do all that shit for you. I don't think you actually have to make something that can think.
Well, and there's lots of people who would agree with that. In fact, what they would say...
Because that's the thing. The lifestyle that they're picturing having, I am down with that. Where I don't do shit and robot... I got robot butlers and shit. I am... But I'm just like, none of them have to be actual thinking things.
Okay, well, there's some debate about that. About just how smart some machines are going to have to get before we can achieve that. And some people would agree with you and say, oh, well, you know, we just want AI to reach a certain point and then we'll stop. And everyone else is like, well, how do you know that you're going to stop?
Well, and then becomes a semantic argument.
Exactly. And then how do you know that, what is there a possibility that we're going to enslave sentient beings because we don't think they're thinking, or we don't allow ourselves to think that because of the economic advantages they give us, and so we refuse to see that they're sentient?
As the point at which they can learn on their own, they can build a better AI than themselves, and they can do it quickly, and it becomes iterative at a speed we can't even comprehend, and within a very short period of time, they become far superior to us and don't need humans. That's one of the scare things out there.
Okay, now that's...
Once you get a functional growing intelligence that's artificial, it has capacities beyond humans and can therefore outpace us like
that. And what's scary about that exactly?
In that potentially they... I think the idea is they realize they don't need humans and they just either wipe us out or at best just stop taking care of us.
But why would they wipe us out? What benefit would there be in them doing that?
Because we're a resource drain.
What resource are we competing with AI
for?
That
I'm not sure about. It probably depends on what the AI plans on doing.
Well, I doubt they're going to eat food.
Food is tasty, though.
They'll probably find a way to not need to take up any space on the ground. The sun is a source of energy that they can use constantly, almost. Most of the time people talk about, you know, they'll say things like, every culture that's superior to another culture ends up taking that culture over. But you're talking, first of all, you're talking about humans.
Yeah.
And you're not even talking about humans for all time. You're talking about humans for a specific period of time. So there are conditions that are met to make that happen that are not met with artificial intelligence necessarily.
No. However, let's just do it this way. I think it is safe to say that people, possibly including myself, see a danger in there being some sort of species that is more intelligent and capable than humans. And that's what that is.
But what danger is that? Unless they've got something they want.
The danger that they can just do whatever the fuck they want to us.
Well, so
the danger that they can do all the shitty things that humans have been doing to every other species. Not necessarily that they will, but the fact that we have means there's no guarantee they won't.
But we have.
They won't just create fun places where they watch humans die because they hit them with a magnifying glass. You know,
humans haven't done it just to be, as a whole, we haven't done it just to be sadistic. I mean,
no.
There are sadists, of course, but as a rule, we do it for a reason. So, I mean, I suppose it's conceivable, it's possible that these machines will be sadistic.
They could also become very paternalistic. Turn us into Cybermen. I mean, they could do the equivalent of colonialization. Like, humans are just dumb mammals. They need to be taught how to do better, whether they like it or not. And we get to decide what's better. I think people are just scared of the idea of something other than humans potentially having power over humans. And I acknowledge the possibility that that could go poorly also. Not saying it will. Saying it's possible. And again, since I don't see the upshot, I'm like, let's not do that.
Yeah, I don't. Again.
You don't think it's possible that if artificial intelligence got created and got super advanced, that they might force anything on humans in terms of behavior or living situation or anything that humans might object to and have no say in the matter?
I don't deny that it's possible. I mean, again, there would have to be some reason, like what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Let's say that...
There's got to be a reason.
Let's say they do develop, or some of them even, maybe not even all of them, but some of them develop an ethic where it's like, hey, that's our moral responsibility to take care of these creatures, and they are too stupid to know what's good for
them. But there's all... Yeah, and there's really...
They do their thing.
And there's really good shit that could come out of it, too, potentially.
But,
So you're in a position where you're already choosing to trust the goodwill of artificial intelligences that don't exist yet.
No, I'm just not willing to go the other way either. Like when
I definitely don't think it's guaranteed, but that's what I'm saying. I see it as a potential risk and I don't see the benefit.
Oh, okay. Well, I see what you're saying, but my position for a long time on this kind of stuff was like it's kind of like cloning. You know, it's like, well, it might be okay, but maybe it's not. The benefits are academic. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, oh, we know how to do it. That's the only reason to do it.
Oh, no, there's lots of cool potential things that come out of cloning.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about, like, making someone's organs before they need a transplant or something like that.
Yes, that's a big one. It also potentially changes food production in a lot of ways.
But, like,
a lot
cloning
of potential...
a whole person...
Well, then there have been like four movies about that.
Well, I'm just saying.
Where they just leave them as harvest.
There
as
are organ there types. Are these big things like that in artificial intelligence where if you think about it, like I said before, my opinion is that the main reason anyone wants to do it is just so they should prove they can.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's proven an advantage to doing it. Then you get to the thing that you were talking about where, okay, well, just develop artificial intelligence up to a point where it's optimally helpful but not sentient. But how do you know when and where that is? So then you have to decide what the rules are going to be.
Yeah.
And who's going to decide that. So it becomes a very complex thing. So, but then you start talking about, well, is this just such a slippery slope we shouldn't be doing it at all? Well, that doesn't seem to make sense. We shouldn't go that way. So I guess where I've settled on this issue is, well, first of all, there's always going to be someone trying to do it.
Yeah.
We're not going to get away from that.
No, definitely.
So then what? So then it just makes me think that we need to be ready to deal with these things as sentient beings that deserve all the considerations and rights that the rest of us have, and how are we going to handle that?
So your views on AI are essentially equivalent to the views of a very liberal-leaning sex ed teacher. It's going to happen, so we should just teach people how to do it responsibly and what the consequences are, and pay attention to what we're doing, instead of denying that it's going to happen at all and just trying to hide it from everyone.
Or trying to stop it, and then someone does it who you don't want to be doing
it. Exactly.
And that kind of stuff.
See? Yeah. You're a progressive sex ed teacher of AI. We are... I know normally I say we are way over time. We are way over time. People probably stopped listening like 5 minutes ago because they're like, this is too long. I don't listen to them this long. This is the Blade Runner 2049 of... of...
Magical Talking Head
episodes. in case you're wondering, title is going to be And Here's Hell. I decided that a while back. Frequently the title is just whatever makes you laugh the most.
Okay.
In the episode.
Okay, I see.
Sometimes you don't laugh at all, though, and then it's problematic.
Okay.
All right, so listen again next week. Write the hat. Maybe. I mean, I'm not telling you how to do your business. You know, you do what you want with it, but... You don't necessarily have to write a question you already wrote again. Not saying that happens. Now, and I'm not saying if somebody else wrote it and then you write that, that happens all the time. That's fine, whatever. But your own question again, you know.
Just search your heart.
Yeah, it's also, yeah, you know, look in your heart, decide. and then, you know, go with whatever your AI masters tell you to do. And also like us on Facebook, and go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and take the Turing test.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.